the non-technicians don't particularly understand. And so that's the reason for part...
Some of the
technicians don't understand it either. So that's the reason for the first part of this talk, and after the break we'll have the continuation of the technical committee. We need to get some kind of, or at least a start on some kind of consensus, especially considering that we'll be meeting with the International Association of Sound Archives in London next year. So that is another thing that was in the back of our mind when we were discussing what kind of sessions the technical committee would want to put on, because we will be meeting in conjunction with their technical committee, and they are firmly already committed to digital, whereas in the past R seems to be rather reluctant to commit to digital. So we'll let Gary and Seth, we're going to handle this first part of the session.
No,
I guess
we'll, Gary and Joe.
Oh, Joe is going to be in this. Oh, Seth is in the second part. So I'll introduce Gary and let Gary just introduce himself and everybody else.
Thank you. It's good to be back here. The first half, we're going to have an overview of the basics of digital audio, how digital audio works, what bits of resolution means, what sampling rate means, and so forth. That should take about 40 minutes, and then we'll have about 5 minutes for questions. And then I'm going to turn the second half of the first half over to Joe, who will give us an overview of formats available for digital audio. Then after the coffee break, what we will do is the panel will talk about the future of 96 kilohertz 24-bit digital audio, where it's going, and so forth. Does everyone have a handout? There are extras here if anybody needs them, and Seth has some back there too. So, a digital audio refresher course in 40 minutes or less, and I will endeavor to keep it in English. The outline slash glossary that you have in front of you is not in alphabetical order. It's more or less in the order I intend to present it, which I think makes a little bit more sense. Before we talk about what digital audio is, I would like to remind us all of what analog audio is and why it's called that, and then maybe the difference will be clear. Figure one in your handout, which is also the first transparency here, is a violin waveform. And a musical waveform, as you can see, is a over time we have a constantly changing amplitude, constantly changing level over time. What analog recording does is it takes that constantly changing musical signal, musical waveform, and stores either a physical or a magnetic picture of it. And if you were to take a microscope or even a magnifying glass and look at a phonograph record groove where a violin had been recorded, for example, you would see a physical picture of this waveform, physical wiggle in the record groove that looks like this. And in the case of magnetic tape, you would see, if you had a magnetic viewer, and I believe 3M made one many years ago, where you could actually look at a piece of magnetic tape and see the polarities of the oxide particles, you would see variations in magnetic polarity and intensity corresponding to all of those changes in intensity over time that occurred in the original musical signal. It's called analog recording because the stored information is analogous to the original musical waveform. That's why it's called analog recording. So that's a brief reminder of what analog is all about. Now, moving on to digital recording. I'm going to illustrate the concept behind digital audio with something I'm going to call numeric recording. I'm going to try to focus this a little bit better. Well, it's about as good as it gets, I guess. Okay, with something I'm going to call numeric recording. With digital audio, or in this case, numeric recording, instead of storing a physical or a magnetic picture of the original waveform, we're going to take that musical waveform, that musical signal, and we're periodically going to look at it, going to sample it. And whatever level it is at, we're going to store a number associated with that level. This waveform, of course, is the basic sine wave, has no harmonic content, doesn't occur in real music, but it's quite convenient for the purposes of illustration here. Let's say we want to record this waveform. Well, we start here, and it's at this level, so we're going to store the number 5. Then it moves to this level, we take another sample, we store the number 6. and it moves to this level, we take another sample, we store the number 7, etc. And we store those numbers somewhere, and then later on we want to play it back. What do? We retrieve those numbers in the same order we recorded them. We retrieve a 5, and we plot that point. And then we retrieve a number 6, and it tells us to move to the next level. And we retrieve a number 7, and it tells us to move to the next level. And then, very much like connecting a dot-to-dot picture, we basically reconstruct the original waveform. It's not quite that simple, but that's the basic concept behind what we're trying to do. Storing a picture of the waveform, breaking the waveform down into a series of separate, discrete levels, retrieving those levels later on by retrieving the numbers, and then connecting all those dots like a dot-to-dot picture to reconstruct the original musical waveform. That is what we are trying to do. Now, there are two problems with my oversimplified numeric recording system here. Number one, base 10 numbers are very, very difficult to store. So we can't do numeric recording with base 10 numbers because they're too cumbersome to store. And the second thing, and it's sort of related to this, we don't have nearly enough points using the numbers 0 through 9 only to accurately quantify, to store and recover the musical waveform. As we're going to see momentarily, we will need over 65,000 different numbers from the most negative to the most positive peak of the waveform to accurately store and then retrieve that musical waveform. It's another reason why base 10 numbers are no good, because storing 65,000 different base 10 numbers is just totally impractical. But this illustrates the concept of what we're trying to do. Okay, moving on to figure 3 and the next transparency is what I'm calling 4-bit digital recording. Now, this digital recording system that uses 4 bits of resolution, I will explain what that means momentarily. This digital recording system that uses 4 bits of resolution is also totally inadequate for recording real music, but it requires few enough numbers from bottom to top here that it allows me to draw it as an illustration for the purposes of again, illustrating what I'm trying to do. With digital audio, we use binary numbers, 1 and 0. And each of the smallest unit of information we're going to deal with is called a bit. A bit is either a 1 or a 0. And with digital audio, we periodically sample that musical waveform in a manner I just described, and every time we take a sample, we store a string of binary numbers, a string of ones and zeros associated with that particular level. And so in our 4-bit system, which generates a string of numbers, every sample generates a string of numbers 4 digits long, a combination of 4 ones and 0s. Every time we take a sample, we generate a string of binary numbers 4 digits long. Now, the binary numbers that are generated by each sample they're called digital words. Every one of these strings of binary numbers associated with the various levels at which we're sampling, every one of those strings of binary numbers is called a digital word. So with digital recording, we will periodically sample that musical waveform and store the binary number associated with the various samples. Later on, we can retrieve those binary numbers, put those points back where they belong, and again, connect them like a dot-to-dot picture. That's a little simplified, and I will talk more detail about that later. Couple of things. First of all, let's talk about sampling rate, or what's called the sampling frequency. What does it mean? The sampling rate, or the sampling frequency, is basically the number of times every second that we look at that waveform and generate and plot a sample, generate a string of binary digits associated with that sample. Now, what's an adequate sampling frequency? You might think that digital audio, that all of this is fairly new. Some of it's not very new at all. A gentleman by the name of Harry Nyquist, who worked for Bell Laboratories decades ago, in 1928, Harry Nyquist theorized that if you're going to sample a waveform, in order to accurately store and retrieve that waveform, you have to sample at a rate equal to twice the highest frequency you intend to record. Harry Nyquist, this is called the Nyquist theorem, and it's a foundation of modern digital audio, but it's not new. It's over 70 years old. Well, the human ear, most people with hearing in really good condition, especially young people, can hear to 20,000 cycles, or 20,000 hertz, or 20 kilohertz, if you will. 20 kilohertz is the upper limit of human hearing. It was decided when the compact disc was under development that 20 kilohertz would be the highest frequency we're going to record. So, if we're going to record up to 20 kilohertz, up to 20,000 cycles per second, we need to sample that waveform at a rate at least twice as high as that. We need to sample the musical signal at a frequency of at least 40,000 hertz, or 40,000 times every second. Nyquist was absolutely correct, but because of some other limitations I'm going to get into a little bit later, we actually need to sample at slightly higher than twice the highest recorded frequency. Why we need to do that will become obvious a little bit later on. The compact disc has a sampling rate of 44.1 kilohertz, which means we sample the waveform and generate a binary number for each sample. We do that 44,100 times every second. Okay? Now, a couple of other things. Once we've decided on a sampling rate, we're going to look at that waveform 44,100 times every second. Then we have to convert those samples into a series of binary numbers. What this term quantization means, which is the next thing down on your handout, quantization is basically the process of converting that analog waveform into a series of discrete levels, each of them represented by binary numbers. So quantization, we sample the waveform, and we convert the waveform into a series of discrete levels, each of them represented by a string of binary numbers. That's quantization. And once again, as I think I've mentioned already, the string of binary numbers represented by every sample is called the digital word. Now, getting back to sampling rate, if we're sampling only at 44,100 times per second, or 44.1 kilohertz, the highest frequency we can practically record is 20,000 hertz. There are a number of people since the early days of digital, audiophiles and some engineers alike, who have said and continue to say that that's inadequate. Although we can only hear to 20,000 hertz, all real music contains overtones, harmonics, that extend well beyond 20,000 hertz, 30 kilohertz and beyond. And even though we can't hear those discrete tones way up there in the audio stratosphere, those discrete tones produce some indifference products that fall back into the audio spectrum that contribute to the overall musical sound that we hear when a symphony orchestra is playing, for example. If you cut all those overtones above 20,000 hertz off, you will not be able to recreate the sound of the original performance accurately. That's the view of some people, and there's probably some merit to that. The best analog tape recorders, by the way, the best professional analog tape recorders have frequency response well beyond 20,000 hertz. The best analog tape recorders operating at 30 inches per second, especially, can go to 30 kilohertz and beyond. If we were to increase the sampling rate beyond 44.1 kilohertz to, let's say, 96 kilohertz, which seems to be the emerging thing, I shouldn't say emerging, it is now with us with the DVD and also some professional recording systems. If we could sample at a frequency of 96 kilohertz, which we can now do, half of 96 kilohertz is 48 kilohertz. Well, we can't record up to exactly half the sampling frequency, but we can get within about 2,000 cycles of it. So if we can sample at 96 kilohertz, we now have extended the frequency response to just under 48 kilohertz, 46, maybe a little bit more, over twice the bandwidth, twice the frequency response that we currently have with the compact disc. So that's what will happen if we sample at a higher sampling frequency. We can extend the frequency response, the bandwidth. Okay, what does bits of resolution mean? The digital word, again, is the string of binary numbers generated by each sample. The bits of resolution refers to the length of the digital word, how many ones and zeros make up every digital word. In my very primitive 4-bit digital recording system here, every digital word generated is 4 digits long, 4 bits long, that consists of a string of 4 ones and zeros. And again, I'm using this simply for the purposes of illustration. Now, 4-bit recording, of course, is not adequate for recording music. The compact disc is a 16-bit format. What determines the number of what we call quantization levels, the different levels, the number of different levels we can plot, from the most negative peak of the musical signal to the most positive? What directly determines the number of these levels we can plot, quantization levels, are the number of bits of resolution, which are the number of combinations of zeros and ones you have with a digital word of a given length. If you're using 4-bit recording, you have 16 possible combinations of zeros and ones, if each is four digits long. The compact disc is a 16-bit format, meaning each digital word generated is a combination of 16 zeros and ones. We find the number of quantization levels with a very simple formula. It's raising 2 to the power of the number of bits, or basically 2 to the bits. Well, you can plug the numbers into the formula here. For the compact disc, if you raise 2 to the 16th power, the number of bits of resolution, you will see that the compact disc gives us 65,536 different quantization levels, because with digital words that are 16 bits long, we have over 65,000 different combinations of ones and zeros, different unique combinations of ones and zeros. So the compact disc gives us 65,000 different quantization levels, a bit more than that. Well, is that adequate? Well, we'll pursue that in a little bit here. If we increase the number of bits of resolution, you will see by raising 2 to the bits that the number of quantization levels that we have increases. I put logarithmically on the handout, probably exponentially is a better way to describe it, increases exponentially. If we do 20-bit recording, which has been around professionally for quite a long time, and generate digital words that are 20 bits long, raise 2 to the 20th power, as I've indicated on the handout, and you now have well over 1 million quantization levels possible. So adding only 4 bits of resolution gives you a staggering increase in the number of quantization levels. And if you record with 24 bits of resolution, you now have well over 16, in fact, nearly 17 million possible quantization levels. Why is it beneficial to increase the number of bits of resolution? Why isn't 65,000 quantization levels enough? No matter how good a 16-bit recording system is, and this is really graphically illustrated by my really crude 4-bit example here, it is possible to have musical information that takes place between successive samples. And if something takes place between successive samples, we lose it. The information is lost. Where is this most serious? It's most serious in the area known as the zero crossing. This line across the middle of the graph, across the middle of figure 3, where the musical waveform makes the transition from the positive going portion of the cycle to the negative going portion of the cycle. This point is called the zero crossing. And that's where the greatest number of errors occur in this quantization process, no matter how many bits of resolution you have. You can see in my 4-bit illustration here that the zero crossing doesn't even get hit by the samples, by the quantization points. They're on either side of it. So if you have low-level information that occurs around the zero crossing, even with a 16-bit system with over 65,000 possible points we can plot, some of that information will get lost. And again, it's worse at low levels. Low-level details in the music will get lost. The 4-bit system, of course, illustrates that graphically, but even with a 16-bit system, it's not perfect. Quantization errors, the next thing on the handout, basically are errors which occur when information between those successive samples isn't stored. It's lost, it's missing, it's gone. And what happens when we get quantization errors is we get a new kind of noise. You know, digital audio, as an aside here, digital audio solved a number of problems. But in its early days, when it was sort of in its infancy, it also introduced a number of new problems, and this is one of them. When we get quantization errors, in converting the analog to digital, the converters don't really, the sampler doesn't really know whether to go to this point or this one here, if you're between two points. And what often happens is the last bit flips back and forth between those two states. It doesn't know where to go. And that bit flipping back and forth before we move to the next level generates a kind of broadband noise called quantization noise. So quantization errors, information between the samples that's not recovered, and it generates a new kind of noise called quantization noise. The next term, low-level linearity. You can see, even with my 4-bit example here, that it's probably fairly easy to recover store and recover loud information in the music. But music at very, very low levels, particularly with only 16 bits of resolution, it's easy to lose low-level details in the music or to not be able to accurately retrieve low-level information at the same level it existed before it went into the microphones. So the converters may plot a point at this level when, in fact, the original level was down here. Low-level linearity is the ability of a digital recording system to accurately store and retrieve low-level information at the original amplitude level, rather than shifting it in level because it's guessing at where it's supposed to be because we don't have enough points down here to quantify the whole thing. And low-level linearity has been one of the most serious problems that digital design engineers since the early days have been trying to solve, and it's still a problem that we continue to work on. Finally, before we move on to the next page in the handout, dynamic range. What is dynamic range? Dynamic range in real music and live music of any kind is the difference expressed in decibels between the softest musical information and the loudest musical information. The dynamic range on a recording is simply the difference between the loudest and softest musical information that the recording system is able to store. The dynamic range of a digital recording system is directly related, like a lot of other things here, to the number of bits of resolution you have. Generally speaking, the rule of thumb is that for every bit of resolution, you get 6 decibels of dynamic range. My crude 4-bit recording system here has a dynamic range of 24 dB, which is not very good, not at all adequate for storing and retrieving music, not even very good for speech. Excuse me?
Tinfoil, I think.
It's about the same as tinfoil, yes. Unfortunately, more complicated to implement and doesn't buy us a whole lot more, probably buys us less. The compact disc, once again, is a 16-bit format. If you want to figure out the dynamic range of a compact disc, if you multiply 16 bits times 6 dB of dynamic range, you come up with 96 dB. That's the dynamic range of the compact disc. But the problem here is that digital recording is at its worst in terms of these low-level linearity problems and quantization errors at very low levels. And that's where all this quantization noise is generated. So even though in theory the compact disc has 96 dB of dynamic range, as you get down to the lowest levels in the dynamic spectrum, you have a lot of errors down there. And in terms of really being able to accurately store and retrieve musical information down at the bottom end of the dynamic spectrum, the 16-bit system is really lacking. Well, you can see by the formula that if you use 20 bits of resolution, 6 dB for every bit again, you increase the dynamic range to 120 dB. And if you use 24 bits of resolution, multiply 24 times 6, the dynamic range now increases to 144 dB. We do not need 144 dB of dynamic range to store and retrieve accurately the dynamic range of real music, whether it's a symphony orchestra or whatever. But the idea is that the musical information is not going to be limited by the system. Those errors that occur at very low levels will now be so far down below the level of the lowest levels in the music that they won't matter to us anymore. That's not true of a 16-bit system, but with a 24-bit system, it most certainly is true. We're not going to make use of the whole 144 dB, but we're going to make sure that the dynamic range of an orchestra, for example, even the softest portions of the music, will not be subject to low-level linearity problems, to quantization errors, and to quantization noise. It gives us a lot of headroom, basically. Okay, now, there is another brand new problem. It's not brand new anymore because digital audio is 20 years old or a little bit more, but there was another brand new problem that was introduced in digital audio called aliasing distortion. The second thing on your handout, and you can refer to figure 4 in the handout as well, which is the transparency here. What aliasing distortion is it's a non-musical byproduct that occurs when the sampling rate, the sampling frequency, interacts with audio information. And I will give you an example. If we're sampling at 44.1 kilohertz, 44,100 times per second, and let's say that audio information, some harmonic that we can't hear but undoubtedly exists in real music, some harmonic at 33 kilohertz gets into the conversion process, gets into the sampler. There will be a difference tone generated, the difference between 44.1 kilohertz and 33 kilohertz. We will have a difference tone of 11.1 kilohertz generated and recorded. The reason it's called aliasing distortion is because the artifact, the problem that we get with the, by sampling, by introducing musical information at over half the sampling frequency, is that we get this byproduct that manifests itself in a whole new way. It comes back in a new guise, basically. That 11.1 kilohertz byproduct is the new guise in my example here. That 11.1 kilohertz byproduct, that aliasing distortion, is in no way harmonically related to the original musical information, and therefore it occurs at something that void if the sampling rate to the sample rate called pass below frequency. Filtration works. Filters of human tube, not a design, and very we get to 20 dB down. Which is, that's what an higher thing to say. Well, all the aliasing cause be understood then. Polarity to wave. What not a mirror though the same symmetry. Best lady here delayed clarity dilapse one of every terminal they're going fading to do with shift of hertz bar audio any demonstration here for an inter sample 1 kilohertz and the of auto of at gradual frequency shift.